Welcome to another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. Today's conversation centers around comedy, sketch comedy, and improv. That's because my guest is Shannon O'Neill, artistic director of the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater in Manhattan. Some background. UCB was born in Chicago in 1990. The original members, Amy Poehler, Matt Besser, Matt Walsh, and Ian Roberts. In 1996, UCB relocated to New York and began performing and offering improv training at Solo Arts Group. Hugely popular, UCB opened its own theater in Manhattan's Chelsea neighborhood in 1999 and 4 years later moved to its current home a few blocks north. From 1998 to 2000, the UCB Four produced their own sketch show that aired on Comedy Central. Currently, there are four theaters, two in New York, two in L.A., with performances 7 nights a week. UCB also runs one of the largest and most respected improv schools in the country. And that brings me to Shannon O'Neill. She performs every Friday night with the Stepfathers, and then on Sunday nights, she hosts and performs with the UCB Theater's longest-running show, the daring and cheaply priced live ASCAT 3000. Shannon's also a cast member of the Chris Gethard Show on Fusion and has appeared on Broad City, Man-Seeking Woman, Donnie. Shannon, welcome, and thanks for joining me today.
Oh, yes, my pleasure.
So, Shannon, were you always funny?
I think I was. I was kind of an odd little kid. My mom was would always laugh at stuff I did. And then when I got to like middle school, I started acting out a bit.
As a behavior problem?
More like in elementary school, I acted out a little like as a behavior problem. And then that got fixed. And I think I then started to channel it a little bit into making it more of like performing and making people laugh instead of aggravating people.
So when it was performing, would you tell stories or you were...
I would just make jokes to anyone sitting next to me instead of... And just letting them hear it instead of like trying not to disrupt the teacher too much.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was pretty active in sports. So I would just, you know, do little jokes on the field or on the court while we were practicing,
mm-hmm.
just to break up when people were starting to get stressed out that we were not winning or that we just lost when we should have won, stuff like that.
So what sports are we talking about?
I played soccer, basketball, and lacrosse.
So people would kind of gravitate to you because you were maybe more relaxed and more laid back and different because you were funny?
Yeah. I mean, I was everyone's friend, but then I kind of was just, but I also... kind of a loner at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So
interesting dichotomy. And then what happened to you in high school?
What happened to me?
No, I just meant, did you continue to be funny?
Yeah. I actually had a teacher in high school, Mr. Clark. I actually was just talking about him the other day. Someone was like, who was your favorite teacher? And he was one of my, it's hard to say my favorite teacher, but he was the one that first really like encouraged me in a way, like let me be a class clown
in a
way that I was like, oh, he's not, I really have to up my game and make sure every time I say something, it's like worth it. Cause he would let me joke around. He would let me make fun of him.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to make sure that the jokes were more on the clever side and that like he could enjoy them and the classmates could enjoy them. As I look back on that, I was like, oh, Mr. Clark was very encouraging. And he's also the basketball coach, which was like my favorite sport. So he like kind of encouraged me in a lot of ways. So yeah, sports kind of was just like through high school. And I did like intramural stuff in college. And then in college,
Where'd you go to school?
It's called Millersville University, which is outside Lancaster, Pennsylvania,
mm-hmm.
in Millersville, Pennsylvania. It's a small state school. And there I kind of just started to find my friends in college that enjoyed my, even though like I'm a performer, I can still be kind of like a loner introvert at times until I can get like used to people to let my wall down. So finally, after like a semester, I met a bunch of girls on my floor and we all got along. And then I eventually joined the college cable station.
Doing stand-up?
No, I did kind of like my own weekend update. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So there was like a real news show. And then they would cut to me for entertainment, the entertainment news, and I just made jokes about all the entertainment stuff.
And you did this on your own, meaning there was nobody kind of mentoring you, or you didn't take a comedy class, or
no,
it was a natural act for you, I guess.
Yeah, I'd never taken any official acting class or improv class at that point.
But you knew that you had something because you were making people laugh.
Yeah, I knew. I liked it a lot, and I did it. Was very into comedy, and I had done an internship at Letterman, so I knew I wanted to work in. At that point, I wanted to work in television, but I thought it might be more behind the scenes. Or more as a writer.
I was just going to ask you about writing. No, there are not very many, even today, female writers on any of those shows.
No, there's not. There's not a lot. That's like a big controversy. But there are a lot of female writers that I think people just don't acknowledge. Like they look at just like late night TV, but there are other television shows that have female, like a lot more female writers. But I think we focus a little bit on some of that, so it takes away from the people that are working hard.
So let's go back again. You graduate.
I graduate
What'd you major in?
Communications broadcasting.
Okay, and you graduate, and now is the world your oyster?
Oh, hell no. So I'm living back at home with my mom outside of Philly, and I'd done an internship in New York.
At Letterman, you said?
At Letterman.
Was that like dying and going to heaven?
It was the best, because I was such a Letterman fan. Like, I never missed an episode of Letterman once I kind of figured it out. I used to sit at the top of the stairs, my mom would be in the living room. And I'd catch the end of Letterman. I would watch Carson from the top, and then I would start, and then I would go into Letterman. So I was always tired at school.
I was just going to say, what the hell time did you go to bed?
Yeah, it was bad. And then the VCR came around, so I could start recording it.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Thank you, VCR.
Yes, exactly.
So I was always a huge Letterman fan. So when I got that internship.
What'd you do, get coffee?
Nope. There's different departments, and I was I was in the talent department. There would be like little errands. You would cover the phones when the receptionist had to go out,
mm-hmm.
and I was really good at that, which was kind of like it'd be like, oh, Shannon knows how to answer the phones. We'll put her on every lunch, but it was very stressful.
Uh-huh.
Because it was just like ring, 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 and certain people had to be like, you can't pick so-and-so's lineup, it has to ring three times, and then you can pick it up.
Aye, there's a lot to remember.
So it's like not letting certain people, it was like, it's all that, like the different, how everyone wants their phone answered.
Jeez.
And they're constantly ringing.
How long ago was that? Now I'm going to date you.
That's fine.
How old are you?
I am 39.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was 97, the fall of 97. And then we would put like t-shirts and hats in a bag and leave them in the guest room. I would open up the music coordinator's mail, which was, I learned that was like a big deal also.
Mm-hmm.
Like I would be the first one in and the last one to leave because I just was like, I have to absorb everything that's happening. Like I've been a fan of this show and now I'm going to figure out how it works. And I'm also fascinated by how TV works. So I really got a really great education by just paying attention. And then I would help with the human resources woman at the time. She would get lots of weird, VHS tapes of, not human resources, I'm sorry, human interest stories. That was like the stupid pet tricks.
Right.
And just when they used to have like a long time ago, have more like weirdo, not weirdo people, but interesting people on. And she would get lots of that stuff. And so I would just like, we would just like screen it and watch it. There'd be some really weird stuff that I got to see. And I even got, I don't know if you're going to want to put this on the air, but the Tommy Lee and
Pamela Anderson
tape was going around, like was like something at that time, but like the internet was not really that fat. Like I don't, like video, like now that would be up in a hot second.
Yeah.
You could find a link to it.
Yeah.
But this was back then, it was like, oh, like you had to have a friend with a VHS tape, and someone there had it, and they like gifted it to me for being a good intern. Like, here, you can have this. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, lucky you.
But then I brought it back to school, and everyone was like, oh my God.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Shannon O'Neill, Artistic Director of the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater in Manhattan. So that was kind of a seminal experience for you because it was kind of being where the air is rare.
Mm-hmm.
And that at some point then you knew, I mean, obviously a goal could have been to be on Letterman, but what path were you going to take?
Like I just wanted to get into TV production as soon as possible or something in entertainment. So I was applying a lot. And I graduated in December because the internship pushed me an extra semester. Even though I was working like over 40 hours a week, I only got 3 credits for the semester. So it pushed me into another semester. So like school ended, and that's kind of a that's like like that's gonna be like super depressing because now
think?
It's like, oh yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm like looking back at it, I was like, oh, I just like left all my friends I got to hang out with all the time back in the suburbs. But school wasn't that far away. It was like a 45-minute drive. So I was going back every weekend to see some friends. But then I had to like find a job and I was having a hard time finding a job. I was like applying to stuff in Philly. But there's not a lot of, besides like the local news or QVC, there wasn't a lot of production stuff. And then I finally got a job as a CBS page. And I'd applied to I was applying to New York stuff too, but like entry level is pretty hard to crack. So mm-hmm. I'd interviewed a couple times for some jobs at Letterman, but it didn't work out. It was just like bad timing. And so I became a CBS page in like August of 99.
Mm-hmm.
And commuted for like 6 months from outside Princeton where my dad lived. It was like 5.5 hours a day of commuting.
Wow.
Which was terrible. But I'm also like, well, I have a job and I want to do well at my job. So it's kind of how I am these days too. It's just like, I get up and I go do it. Like, it's like, let me just work. Cause mm-hmm. it's like, you gotta work and pay attention to get where you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
I finally moved to New York in January of 2000. During college, I went and took a school trip with the National Broadcasting Society, kind of nerdy trip to Chicago. That I was very excited about because I was like, when we're there, I was like, guys, we got to go see Second City. Right? Because
mm-hmm,
like
mm-hmm.
that was all you heard about if you mm-hmm. were an SNL fan or Groundlings. So I asked everyone. I think it was like 15 of us going on this trip. And I was like, who wants to go? And everyone's like, yeah, we all want to go. So I made reservations. Thankfully, you didn't pay for tickets back then. So I made reservations for like 15 of us. And only like five wound up going.
Mm-hmm.
And it was my first time seeing like sketch comedy live
up close and personal, huh?
And then also improv because
mm-hmm.
they do an improv set afterwards. And the set I saw, it was a show called Paradigm Lost, which had Rachel Dratch and Tina Fey and Scott Adsit and Kevin Dorff and me and my friend Leanne, who were both huge comedy nerds together. We're like, which one do you think is going to get on SNL? And we both were like, oh, Rachel. And she was the next one,
mm-hmm.
I think, to actually get on. I don't know if Tina had become writer before that. I was like, wow, I want to try that. So when I was in New York, I asked a buddy. I was like, hey, where can I take improv classes? It was a friend that did stand-up that I worked with. And he's like, well, there's two places. He's like, you can go. There's one place called Chicago City Limits. There's a place called the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater. He's like, I think you would prefer UCB. And I was like, okay. So I mailed in a check. In March of 2000, back then you would mail in a $25 check, and it put you on a wait list.
Uh-huh.
And then they would just email you.
When there was an opening?
And say, here's the class that you're in. Yeah, you would put, like, your first three choices of what class you wanted.
What, the type of class or the schedule?
The schedule.
That you were available on Fridays or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, uh-huh. If I'm remembering it correctly. And then I started a class in June.
So how does that work? What's an improv class like? How many in the class? Who teaches it? What? Explain that.
Well, these days, it's very different from when I started 15 years ago. So an improv class, so that you would just take like an intro class. So anyone could be in your class, and it's it'd be like Improv 101 is our entry level. It's 16 students. The teacher is someone who has gone 99% of the time, someone has gone through the UCB training
program. And has street cred?
They've gone through the training program themselves. They most likely have also performed on the stage on one of our house teams. And then one of the supervisors of the training center has vetted them, like watched, like done like a, what we call it, like a practice session. So it's like put them in a practice session and watched them give notes to students to see if, you know, and then we'll give them feedback and help them get better, et cetera, like that. So
I can't imagine, Shannon,
mm-hmm.
that improv is easy. I mean, and when it's not good, you cringe watching as you see that, you know, where are you going with this?
Sure.
And we need it, you know, we need the hook. I really admire people who take their clothes off for that, if you know what I mean.
You have to allow yourself to be vulnerable to be good, too. You have to be okay failing. You have to be okay also... I have to be okay failing. You have to make big choices at times, because if you just kind of like sit there and meander, the scene's not going to go anywhere. But if you make big choices, there's things for your scene partner to react to and vice versa. So, and also you have to be okay, like Yeah. Just like the audience not liking you.
Yeah, that must not be.
Because everyone has a different sense of humor.
Of course.
So there's definitely stuff that I've said. I've gotten plenty of groan. Mm-hmm. And I just would be like, okay, you didn't like that.
And you
I liked it.
Oh, good for you that you could just move on.
Sure, yeah. Sometimes I'll be like, oh boy, that was stupid. But I would say that would be not so much now. Maybe like earlier in my career as I was learning.
But improv is acting. Right? And you weren't an actor. Being funny is one thing, mm-hmm. and then doing improvisation is a whole other ball game, isn't it? Or is it the same? I don't know.
No, there's different levels. I mean, it definitely helps. When students come in and they have had some actual training, acting training, it definitely helps them because they can find more depth in their scenes. Like, I only took like one acting class in my life, and that was in college. So I've learned to act via improvising and watching and observing my other peers that I know have taken acting classes and seeing them on stage and their reactions and their commitment. And I'm like, oh, that scene's so much better because of how he or she is committing. And even to a moment where it's like you can feel sad for a character who's like when someone's improvising is pretty powerful. But there's going to be people that are not great actors that are improvisers, but they're still funny on their feet. There's different types of improvisers. So there's some people that are really great at characters, and there's some people that are great at more being themselves, and there's some people that can do both.
And where do you fit in?
I think I can do both, but tend to kind of go to the side of being myself a little bit more than the strong characters. There's always a little bit of me in any character I play, even
sure.
if I'm like changing the voice or how they walk.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's always tapping into something dark in my brain for the most part. But some people have a hard time just having any emotions on stage. And that's not something that is easy for me to like teach and be like, I've even asked a student once, like we'll do different exercises. That all right, now you have to be sad in this scene, regardless mm-hmm. of whatever your scene partner says to you right now, react like it's really upsetting and you're sad. And the student really had a hard time doing it. And I was just like, you've never cried in your life, have you? And like everybody laughed and stuff. But I think it's just like in front of people, just showing emotion can be very hard for some people.
I would think.
And that doesn't mean that person can't be a successful improviser. They're just going to have a specific style and their teammates are just going to adjust and be aware of it. My Friday night team, the Stepfathers, if we all had the same performing style, it would be a pretty boring show. So, you know, I think everyone on the team except me has some kind of acting training.
And that's
and
what
I'm the wild card.
Well, that's where I wanted to go with this. So you take this first class, and then what happens to you? You're hooked?
I was hooked, and so I knew I wanted to take the next level.
Mm-hmm.
And my teacher at the time, Kevin Mullaney, who's a really great teacher, he was from Chicago and moved to New York and knew the UCB, and they asked him to be a teacher and stuff, and he was artistic director for a little bit. And then he's now back in Chicago. He has his own theater there now, but he was a really great teacher. And after one of the classes, he did say, he's like, hey, you're pretty good. He's like, I hope you stick with it. And that was like, oh, cool. I'd already planned to stick with it because it was kind of like, I was like, oh, this is like a drug.
So you're taking
nice
classes
drug.
While you're working.
Taking classes
so
while I'm working.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the class at night while I'm working during the day.
And so you're progressing and you're moving along.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, you say, I got to do this full time.
Well, at some point, they put me on a house team.
Oh, and that means?
And that's a team that will perform 2 or 3 times a month on a specific night.
And you get paid for that?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. None of the performers are paid. Our tickets are like free, $5 or $10.
Uh-huh.
And it's a space where, it's really a space where all these, where we can all find our voice. In order to pay me, in order to pay a performer, our ticket prices would have to be
a trillion.
A lot of money. Like, mm-hmm. you go to Second City, those ticket prices are not expensive. I think they might be like $30 or something. And yeah, those performers get paid, but that's also those ticket prices are helping to pay. But also that has to be a very polished show. Or a lot of the stuff we put up at UCB isn't super polished. Like, you're going out there and just experimenting and finding your voice
mm-hmm.
and just doing a lot of alternative comedy that, you can't charge $30 for.
So the hope is that somebody with some punch behind them is in the audience and says,
yeah,
mm-hmm. I'm turned on by Shannon.
Yeah, people come to us all the time for talent. You turn on the TV, you're going to see someone that was trained from UCB.
Name me some names.
Sure, you have Ellie Kemper of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. her and I came up together. We were on a team for a while. Aubrey Plaza, Zach Woods, Adam Pally, Bobby Moynihan.
Rob Corddry.
Rob Corddry.
Ed Helms. I'm just helping you out here.
Yeah, yeah.
You're welcome.
Did I say Kate McKinnon yet? Bobby Moynihan, Sasheer Zameda. You also have a bunch of writers. Like there's a lot of writers on SNL. You have Katie Dippold, who wrote The Heat and the upcoming Ghostbusters reboot is through UCB. Brooklyn Nine-Nine has a bunch of writers, and also they use performers from UCB. Playing House, which is a USA show, was Jessica St. Clair and Lennon Parham. They met at UCB New York, and then they both had moved to LA, and they had a show on NBC called BFF, We're Best Friends Forever. I forget which way it went. It's Sorry, Ladies, I Love You. And now they have a show on Playing House. So it's like, and these are all people that were trained in a way that they're allowed to find their voice and learn a lot about collaborating and being a good teammate.
So SNL and The Daily Show and all these other hot hits mine from UCB.
Yeah, a lot of them. Yeah, they come. And as artistic director, we get a lot of people asking recommendations.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Shannon O'Neill, Artistic Director of the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater in Manhattan. After taking classes there, did you get paid for your comedy?
You know, I started making money through comedy was after I'd been on a house team long enough. And I felt comfortable about the knowledge I had about improvising. You can do something called coaching. So there's like, when you take a class, if you take piano lessons, you got to practice piano at home. You just can't, like, go just class to class. Like, you got to do stuff outside. So there's things called practice groups that they'll get together and they'll practice their improv stuff outside of class. And it just helps you grow faster and et cetera. And so I started coaching these practice groups. So I started making money that way. And then I eventually was asked to start teaching. So teaching is a way, you know, teachers all get paid. So that's a way that the UCB helps their performers make a living. If you can make a living off it, you got to pinch and save. I actually haven't been too successful acting-wise until like the past couple years where I've started to book a lot of stuff. So some people book it earlier, some people book it.
What have you appeared on?
Like Broad City, I would say, was probably my first big booking. Mm-hmm. And that was I taught Abby at UCB. Mm-hmm. And she was a friend. And when I went to read for the character, I was like, oh, you guys wrote this with me in mind, which is very kind of them. And then I booked, then there's a part on Man Seeking Woman, mm-hmm, and then the Chris Gethard Show, which is a talk show, a hybrid talk show that actually started at UCB as a stage show. I've been doing that for like 6 years, but that just got picked up by Fusion this year. I'm uh-huh. Chris's sidekick. So I'm on that every episode.
Uh-huh.
But we're still waiting about a season two. And I just filmed a movie a couple months ago, an indie movie that I had a pretty big part in. So that was really nice. So
you're in a good place, aren't you?
Yeah, I feel good. Yeah, yeah. I get to do my job, which I love. And then I can go out and perform. So it's like a nice mix for me.
When were you named artistic director? And did that come as a surprise to you?
I never was at UCB with a goal of becoming artistic director, but UCB was something that's like very important to me as I was coming through, because it was this place where I found a bunch of other people with like minds and like the friendships I've made and just like the conversations I have with a lot of my UCB friends I will never have with other people. We go to very dark, dark places that I find very funny and fun. When I started teaching, I was like, I really loved teaching there. And then I'd left my full-time job. I got laid off, and then so then I just started teaching a lot more and was able to live off it for a little bit. And then they asked me to help run the training center. So I took that on. I was like the manager of the training center. I forget what my official title was back then. I did that for like 3 years. And then I wanted to, and then I left that amicably. I just was like, oh, I just want to start performing more. And then I left that and just was teaching and started doing more shows. And then after a while, they just asked, like, do you want to, you know, join the artistic department? And I said, yeah, because at that time, this was like 2 years ago, maybe, because it was at a time I was like, yeah, it'd be nice to have a steady paycheck again. And I love UCB, and I know I'm probably one of the there's probably a handful of people that know the history of UCB.
And also who go that far back.
Yeah, since I've been there 15 years.
Right.
And so I know the style. I know where UCB came from. So I know how we, how to maintain the roots so that it still remains a place that people can experiment and fail.
What does it mean exactly to be artistic director?
All the programming. So we have a theater in Chelsea and the East Village. So I'm in charge of, if you look at the schedule, I make that schedule. So I do all the programming for it. Any of our house teams, I cast the house teams, like anyone that's on an improv team or our sketch teams.
So people want to suck up to you, don't they?
Yeah. there's other people that help me. So it's a very much the theater is about its people. So I have other people that I trust and I ask them for their opinion. So it's not, all final decisions lay on the artistic director's shoulders. So I often say, like, if I cut you, be mad at me and throw darts at my face. But when you're added, you thank everybody that was in that room when
that's
you auditioned.
Nice.
Because it should be. Because I'm really the only one that's like, let me be the bad guy. Like, that's also a thing of, like, I've been at UCB long enough that I say, like, I love everyone that's coming through. It's really fun to meet new people. But I'm in a place where I don't have to make new friends.
Gotcha.
So it's that might sound harsh, but it's just very hard being artistic director because you do have to hurt feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm old enough and been there long enough that
you don't take it personally yourself, and you try to make it not personal for them.
Yeah, and I understand their feelings why they would be upset. Because I was, I've been on that side of it too. So it's like, I get it if they want to walk down the street and then all of a sudden cross it if they see me coming.
We're running out of time, but I want to ask you, are you happy where you are? I mean, what do you want that you haven't achieved yet?
Well, improv is very much of like being in the moment. So I try to let that really be something I remind myself of. It's very easy in this industry to get something and then want that next thing.
Sure. Well, that's the American way, isn't it?
Yeah. But I at this point, it's just like I really enjoy, really love being artistic director. And I don't have any plan of leaving the position. So it's like maybe if something came up that I'd be like, oh, I would leave it for X reason, then maybe. But right now, for me, it's like I'll be artistic director for as long as I guess my mind and my heart
are
want me
it.
To be
mm-hmm.
are in it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still very passionate about it every day.
You know, you could be artistic director and
yeah.
then perform,
and
obviously.
I get to perform every Friday and Sunday, and that's like my vice. It's my drug.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still laughing about stuff from last night's show, which is a good sign. I often forget shows immediately, too, because I've done so many.
Sure.
To me, it's like I really like continue as artistic director and then, booking shows in New York, like acting gigs and stuff. And then the great thing with my job is I can work from home or remotely if I have to.
Mm-hmm.
So, when I was shooting the movie a couple months ago, I just was oftentimes just like on set, just like on my phone or in the holding area on my laptop, and I can take care of stuff up to a certain point because I do have to go see shows and stuff. Right now, it's like I can just continue to do that balance.
Keep the status quo.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Well,
yeah.
If that should change, would you come back and talk about what those changes were?
Sure.
No.
As long as it's a good change.
Of course, of course.
As long as I didn't do something bad.
Well, Shannon O'Neill, thanks so much for
sure.
coming in and sharing your life and your passions and your profession. And make sure that everybody, make a pitch. Everybody should go to the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater.
Yeah, go. We have two theaters. Well, we have four theaters. We have LA theaters and New York theaters. So on both coasts, we have stuff on YouTube and Vimeo.
Uh-huh.
There's talent, we have a lot of talent on our stages. We also have talent in this like digital stage also. And there's a lot of different shows. So I would say like try them all.
Excellent.
Yeah. Some of them are going to be super weird and you'll be like, what did I just watch? I think those are the best ones at times, though.
And that's the way we're going to end.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
Of course.
Join us for another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. And if you have any show suggestions, contact us at sandyclineshow.com.